is CII.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome, welcome, welcome to another edition of The French Connection. Today's date is September 27th, 2008. It's a Saturday. Again, my name is Daryl Bradford Smith. Great to have all of you listeners here with me again for this most important of broadcasts. We have a guest coming on in a few minutes, so stand by for that. An author, researcher, somebody who was going to bring a lot of weight to his declarations on today's show. I hope everyone is in the listening audience of South Africa and across the Middle East and Europe who are observing Ramadan are enjoying the end of their holiday period. I hope all of you have had a wonderful and an enlightening period of Ramadan. Time is of the essence, ladies and gentlemen. It is the time for you to use this period of Ramadan to possibly share what you are learning about our world, the truth about our world, with others in your family, in your friendship area, and also in your colleagues and so forth. It is time for all of us to begin bringing this information to others. We are facing the financial mess that I predicted in detail over a year ago. I gave all of the information that you are now seeing cross your television screens, if at all, if you watch those screens. I know many people during Ramadan don't watch television, but if you've been reading a newspaper or seeing anything about the United States, Europe, and the Western world's financial system, it is going into complete failure. I told this entire story about the failure that was on the horizon last September, October, November. I gave you details of companies and banks that would fail. I told you that the derivative market was going to go down and that we were going to have problems with swaps and with hedge fund failures and with large banking failures. So what we've got right now is a monetizing of our debt coming for us, where we're going to see hyperinflation and possibly the complete finish of the American dollar as a reserve currency. Now, many people will applaud the end of the dollar coming, but you wouldn't do so if you knew how tied to your own money the dollar is and what that's going to portend for the people who are trying to do business in any country of the world. If you're in Asia or in Africa or South America, it will not matter when the dollar fails, your currency and your country will be terribly affected with a recession / coming depression. So these are important points that you need to make with all of this information, and I urge every one of you all to pay attention to what has been said prior on our previous programmings. I'm hoping that my engineer has been able to find my guest, and maybe he can let me know if the guest is on or not. I know that he's expected to go on in about a couple of minutes here, and I did speak to my guest. His name is Michael Collins Piper. He has written, I think, 7 or 8 separate books. He'll tell you the exact number. And has worked on information regarding this conspiracy that I've spoken to you all about for decades. He is a reporter for a newspaper called the American Free Press in the United States, and has been a big participant in trying to tell the world just how desperate our futures are and how big our problems are. So I'm hoping that my engineer has been able to find him. Maybe he could check with me on that. Okay, look, ladies and gentlemen, we do have the guest. This is great news. We have a wonderful opening coming here. I'm going to bring him up right now. Michael Collins Piper, are you with me?
Morning, Daryl. Good to be talking with you again.
Well, it is great. It was far too long, Michael. You know, I was just giving everybody a little bit of your bio, but I didn't have the exact number of books you've written. You want to tell everybody a little bit about yourself?
Daryl, that's a very good question. I lose track of it myself. I've been writing and lecturing for about 28 years. I'm 48 years old, so I started out fairly young in this. Right now, I am a contributing correspondent to a newspaper called American Free Press here in the United States. It has a website, at AmericanFreePress.net, and I've written numerous books. I won't even go into all the details about them, but suffice it to say that they have. There's been one defining thread among all of the books that I've written, and these books have approached various aspects of Zionist power in the United States and the way that power and influence has impacted upon U.S. foreign policy. And, of course, what we see happening in the world today, not only in terms of, I think, the U.S. financial crisis, but certainly with the provocative behavior by the Bush administration during the past 8 years toward the people of Islam, we can trace that all back to this Zionist power in America. And I've, as an American who loves his country, I have been outspokenly critical of this, and as I say, I have written about it. I've lectured around the world in many places. A couple years ago, I spoke at the International Islamic Fair in Kuala Lumpur, and the third International Islamic Fair, sponsored by Saba Islamic Media, is being held in Dubai, November 10th through 12th. And I'm going to be there again lecturing on these very topics that I've been writing and talking about, and which you certainly have been writing and talking about for a long, long time, Daryl. So,
well, you know, Michael, it's hard to get the rest of the people who aren't onto this conspiracy on board with us, because there's a knee-jerk reaction that people have whenever they hear the term Jew or Jewish. And I want to say right up front, you and I both know there are many Jews out in this world that don't know what's being done in their name. Or if they suspect it, they're not sure. Or if they even are not sure, they've been lied to so much, as many of the Americans and Europeans and the rest of the world have been lied to, that they don't know what's right and what's wrong anymore. Because you can take a look at the Zionist movement within Christianity. So you want to address the fact that this is not specifically a Jewish issue, but
I can affirm that very, very, very clearly because of my own experience. Because of the fact that I've been situated here in Washington, D.C., and worked for a newspaper with national circulation because I have been very highly identified, to the extent that I have any profile at all, the fact that I have been identified as an outspoken critic of Zionism and of some of the actions of the State of Israel, I have been associated on a personal and very friendly and intimate basis over the last, 28 years with some of the most outspoken American Jewish critics of Zionism. Mark Lane, a Jewish American attorney who has, he actually represented the PLO at one point. Dr. Alfred Lilienthal, very, very good friend of mine. Dr. Lilienthal is in advanced years now, but still working through an internet website. Dr. Alfred Lilienthal wrote the famous essay entitled "Israel's Flag Is Not Mine," and it was published in Reader's Digest in 1948. So back as far as 1948, the year the State of Israel was founded, Dr. Alfred Lilienthal, an American Jew, was saying, "I'm an American. I'm an American of the Jewish faith, but I do not support the Zionist cause." So I've worked with Dr. Lilienthal. Chuck Fishbein, a former executive director of the Jewish National Fund, one of the most influential Zionist organizations in America. I worked very closely with Chuck Fishbein for a number of years. He wrote some fantastic work exposing the activities of the Zionist movement here in the United States. And it's kind of poignant because one of the things that woke up Chuck Fishbein to the reality of Zionist racism and exclusivity was the fact that he had an adopted child who was the child of an African-American U.S. soldier and a Vietnamese woman, a child that was left homeless and parentless by the Vietnam War. He adopted this child and attempted to take it into Israel with him on a family trip to Israel. And he found great difficulties there, and this caused him, as an American Jew who had been a long-term supporter of Zionism and the Zionist cause, to take a second look at Israel.
Yeah.
So, you know, and another person, too, is a personal friend of mine, an American Jew, Jack Bernstein, and of course.
Yes, now Jack. Yes. Jack, I've got Jack, two of Jack's books up on my site,
right.
And
that's
boy,
what I was going to say. On your website at IamTheWitness.com, thank God you have commemorated the work of Jack Bernstein. Jack was an American Jew who went to Israel and saw the reality of Israel, and he wrote those two books before he died an untimely and early death. And as I say, Jack was a personal friend of mine, and I worked with him during his final years. And I got to mention somebody else too, because I think this drives home the point that not all Jews support the Zionist cause. One of my other good friends that I worked with for many, many years was the late Haviv Shieber. He was actually the mayor of Beersheba in Palestine before there was even a state of Israel. He was a part of the Jabotinsky movement. He worked with Menachem Begin. But then Haviv began to see that the Zionist dream was an ugly reality for the people of Palestine and, in Haviv's view, a threat to world peace. Haviv broke with the Zionist movement and spent the balance of his life fighting Zionism. And this was a Polish-born Jew who was one of the early immigrants to Palestine in the 20th century. So there's this remarkable record of these outspoken people who are Jewish, who oppose Zionism, and yet their work is very much suppressed by the mainstream media in the United States. And yep. And to the best of my knowledge, in Europe as well.
Well, it is. And you know, Michael, it's interesting when we bring these names up and get any kind of circulation on this information. Of course, I'm attacked as a racist or a crazy or something. But you and I both know that when people like a Ben Friedman were screaming at the top of their lungs, spending their life's fortune to tell the world how bad this really was. And what we would look forward to, there was an audience back then. I mean, Father Conklin, in his missives was very well received for quite a long time. So America did have its opportunity to latch on to the truth, but it seems to have missed its chance. These people were able to do an end run around this information and finally put a silencer on all of this stuff. And we went into almost an information hibernation, if you'll allow, for quite some time. During the 70s and 80s, they built up a very powerful barrier to anybody bringing any of this stuff out. And now what we find ourselves is people have been so Pavlovian, the Pavlov dog kind of thing, you know, where they get this response immediately. If you say something about Jewish Zionism, they get all heebies. And I've had people walk away from me. I've had people, you can see their face become contorted and fearful when you say this, like, oh my goodness, the person standing in front of me is a hate criminal. It really, have they done something psychological to the population?
Well, you know, Darryl, you put your finger on it with the use of one word, one single word, and this is what people need to remember. You put your finger on the very word, and that word is information. They have gained a stranglehold on information. Beginning, you know, you pointed out Father Coughlin, and that's interesting because Father Coughlin was probably, and he was an Irish Catholic priest, Canadian born, who moved to the United States and broadcast to hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people, actually millions of people, during the late 1930s and up until, like, I think probably maybe early 1940s. But in any case, it was after that time frame that the Zionist interests really began to get a lock on the mass media in this country. And increasingly, as the mass media, the major broadcast, television and radio, and then the major newspapers, all began to fall into line. There had been some independent voices out there, but that ended about the mid-20th century. You had William Randolph Hearst, you had Colonel McCormick in Chicago, you had Sissy Patterson in Washington, D.C. These were all major publishers who, in one respect or another, dared to stand up to the Zionist cause. But as they began to die out and the Zionist powers began to consolidate their finances here in the United States, after, of course, the founding of the Federal Reserve in 1913, this money system that dominates the United States, after they began to, they realized that information and the control of information was their key to power, and that's why they began grabbing control of the mass media. Now, fortunately, thank God, thanks to the Internet, we have a vehicle, a means whereby which to go around this media monopoly. But even then, we still have a lot of work to do because so many people, there's so much disinformation and misinformation, much of it deliberately propagated, designed to mislead people, designed to divide people who should be friends, and that's why we have to look at the Internet very, very carefully.
Well, you know, Michael, I want to bring that up. You know, the professionalism that this criminal gang brings to bear on this information when you're trying to get the truth out is not to be dismissed. I must say, you know, sitting from where I am here in France, I have been victimized by people both close to me and people afar. And, I mean, one of the things they said recently, which would, I told you on our private call, they call my wife black so that they can get the white nationalist racists in America to hate me over at certain websites. And the fact is my wife isn't black, and so, but it wouldn't matter, as I told you on our call, whether she was or not. If I loved her, it wouldn't matter little to me. The fact is, though, that they use even lies and innuendo, and they have such powerful access to make these lies go far and wide that the damage gets done regardless of truth.
Well, I mean, Darryl, on a daily basis here in the United States since the September 11th attacks in 2001, They have made Islam a dirty word.
That's right, yep.
It has been a constant refrain in the mass media such that there are people, there are, and I have to say there are many good, decent Americans who unfortunately now believe the lies that they're being told.
Yep.
And these are people who are people of good faith, who are not hateful people, but they are constantly bombarded with the lies and defamations about the Muslim people and about the Islamic faith that they really don't know anything else but what they've heard. So here's a perfect example of it right there that many of our listeners can understand and identify with. It's
well, you know, my personal
experience is the enemy.
Michael, my personal experience here in France, we have almost 7% population from Islam in France here. My experience was with Islamic families were that they were most by and large humble, hardworking, very honorable people. If they said they would show up at an hour, they would. If they did what they said, they followed through with kindness. I had nothing but good experiences with the older generation, but sadly, they have their younger generation here in France has been pulled away from their cultural roots, and they're losing that qualitative humility that came along with the Islamic experience, in my view. And sadly, what we're seeing today is not only are they being vilified from without, but they are being undermined from within. And I see, you know, a lot of this stuff can be rooted back to what I call crypto Judaism or crypto Zionism. Crypto Zionists being people who actually claim to be adherents to Islam, let's say, and in fact are not. They're there to undermine. You'll find them in the Catholic religion. You'll find them in our Protestant Christian movement in America. And you know, I have gone and made lists of people such as, you know, Wesley Clark and Ben Albright and of course John Kerry, and I mean the list goes on and on, where these people are actually working for Zionist Jewish interests, but they seem to be Christians on the surface. A big one here in France is our president here.
Oh, exactly.
So, you know, this is not to be dismissed by the listener, because what's happening is there are people within Islam that are cryptos as well, working against the better interests of Islam. I can tell you right now, this Freemason from Jordan, this King Hussein's son there, King Abdullah, is absolutely a Zionist. I mean, the man is 100% in the Zionist camp, and so is Mubarak. But there are others.
Well, you know, and also, you know, I think it's important to draw back again to this aspect of the media, because What is very, very interesting in the media today, in the Western media, I should say, is the constant refrain that Islam has to be reformed. And all the people who are telling Islam, who are telling us that Islam has to be reformed, are either Zionists or people on the payroll of the Zionists, or a handful of people who call themselves practitioners of Islam, but who are really on the payroll of the Zionist forces. So this is what happened over the years, even within the Catholic Church.
Yep.
The mass media would say, well, the Catholic Church needs to be reformed, but all the people who were calling for the reform of the Catholic Church were not even real Catholics.
Well, you know, the humility of one of the things that we always had when we were growing up, Michael, you're a little younger than me, but I remember the women and men saw each other as very very different than they do today. What we've moved into is effeminate men and masculine women, and we've lost the respect, I think, for women. If you take a look at television broadcasts, they've been objectified, they've been almost degraded to a point. There are a lot of people who've written about this. But it comes along with this routing of the religious strength that Islam has a respect for women that's different than the West. But you know, that wasn't that long ago that women in the West respected themselves more.
Well, you know, that's interesting, Darryl, because over the years, I recall years ago going to what you might call conservative conferences here in the United States, sponsored by these establishment conservative groups that were connected to the Republican Party. And back, for example, during the years when the Mujahideen were fighting against the Soviets in Afghanistan, you would constantly hear these conservatives saying how wonderful Muslims were and that they shared good family values and that they were ideal Republican voters is essentially the argument they were making. But then, after the tide turned, and after the entire Muslim world was targeted by the Zionists following 9/11, and of course you and I know that the official story on 9/11 is a lie, but needless to say, after this, there was a complete turnaround.
Yeah,
complete turnaround in attitude. And again, see, it all comes back again, Darryl. It all comes back to this stranglehold that the Zionists have on the media. And I tell you, they say that we're talking about conspiracy theories. But the funny thing is, Darryl, when we were talking off the air a little earlier here today, you mentioned names, and names are important, that connections between people are important. And I asked the listener to think of it this way. When they hear someone described as a conspiracy theorist, usually what people say is, well, that's a conspiracy because they draw connections between people. Well, when someone is going to build a house, they hire an architect to draw a design, a blueprint of the house that they're going to build. Yep. And that architect sits down there and he says, here's the drawing room, here's the bedroom, here's the hallway, here's the dining room, and he draws it so that everything fits together, so that it's a logical layout, so there's logical connections to go from one room to another through interconnecting doors. Well, this is what you do, this is what I do, this is what every sensible person does when they want to determine the structure of the financial system or the political system, whether it's what's happening in the open or what's happening behind the scenes. You step back and you look at the pattern. And if you see the same names, the same financial institutions, the same political organizations, all operating in an interconnected fashion that is so obvious, then that's not a conspiracy theory. That's a fact. That's a blueprint.
Right.
And anyone who wants a blueprint for what's happening in our world today can go to your website at iamthewitness.com, and at iamthewitness.com they can see all of these books written by some very great writers from the past, people coming from a wide variety of backgrounds and opinions, wide variety of countries.
Well, what they did, Michael, listen for a second.
It all fits together.
Listen for a second. What they did write about was basically based on the blueprint that's also on my website, which is the protocols.
Exactly.
And, you know, many people have poo-pooed the protocols of Zion as being not a valid document. But the fact is, you know, a courtroom in Switzerland said that the document that was presented to the court was, in fact, a forgery. The dictionary definition of a forgery is a replica of the original, meaning... meaning that the original was copied, and that's what the court was reviewing, a replica. So the fact is that document is valid, and it was deemed so by a Swiss court. So what we see is that everything in that document, almost to a letter, has come to pass in the last 100 years. So the fact is, those men that you're talking about in those wonderful, informative books, actually can be brought right back to that protocol document, and it goes letter for letter, Michael. You know, somebody brought up, I had John Kaminsky on my show last week. Another person who I had been poisoned away from by powerful forces within the criminal gang that we're fighting against. Now, John said Maimonides was the person who gave a lot of this indoctrination to his troops early on. But you can follow the thread of Maimonides all the way into the movement from Sabbateans and from Jabotinskys and it goes all the way to today. We can see the unbroken chain of criminals all the way to today's world.
The blueprint, you know, think of it that way, as a blueprint spread out on the wall in front of you. The history is very clear. And I'll tell you something, Daryl, this is something that unfortunately has never been published, but I actually saw the material myself. And unfortunately, the gentleman who came up with the material died several years ago. His private papers have been lost. But I can tell you this much, that a gentleman I knew, he was multilingual. He spoke German, Italian, and, of course, English. He was an American. He was doing extensive research in the Library of Congress on the history of the protocols. And in the course of his research, he came across, and I actually physically saw these things, Daryl. He didn't just tell me this. He showed me photocopies of articles that appeared in an English language Jewish publication issued in London in the 1920s. Now, this is off the top of my head. It could have been the London Jewish Chronicle, but I'm not sure. But in any case, he showed it to me very, very clearly. I held it in my hand, photocopies, and I know they were genuine photocopies because I knew this guy. It stated very, very clearly that this document that we know today of as the protocol, we know today as the Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion, it was very emphatically stated in this London-based Jewish publication that those protocols, while they were not adopted by an official Zionist Congress per se, they in fact did represent a strong body of opinion within the Zionist movement. And as L. Fry and Dennis Fay in the book Waters Flowing Eastward, which appears on your website at IamTheWitness.com, they document that the particular author of what we know of as the protocols and the faction that he was associated with was someone named Asher Ginsberg, who went by another name which escapes me at the moment. I think it was Ahad Haim, something like that. He adopted like a Hebrew name. But the fact is, yes, even London Jewish publications in the 1920s affirmed that the protocols were very real.
Well, now listen, but Colonel Barry Turner has that document in his library.
That's very interesting. I was not aware of that, and I'm glad to hear that someone has gotten their hands on that then.